The Nick Scott Effect. The Nick Scott Effect. Available on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Facebook Watch, and everywhere podcasts are found. Interview requests and show notes available at DJNickScott.com.
It's so good to see you, my friend.
Hey, good to see you too, virtually.
Virtually, yeah. You know, there for many years, I felt like I got to see you all the time, and then you became the man of West Virginia, and I feel like I don't get to see you very much anymore.
Well, first of all, I'm not that man, but you can stop by and see me anytime you want. You know that.
Absolutely. Well, as always, man, it's always great to talk to you, and one reason I wanted to bring you on is because you got your hands in so many things, and there's so many things going on. Where we record this podcast is in the Charleston, West Virginia area. So, you being a Kanawha County Commissioner, there's just so many things happening in our area. And I thought it'd be great to have you on and talk about some of those, I think, wonderful things for our community. So how long have you been on the commission now? 4 or 5 years?
About in February of 2017 is when I was initially appointed. There was a vacancy. Dave Hardy, who was a commissioner, he went up and joined the State House with Jim Justice. He became his revenue secretary. So that opened up a vacancy, and I had been in front of the commission once or twice before. And so I applied, and I think like 11 people applied, and they picked me.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that many people. I just thought they saw Ben Salenga was like, that's it. Done.
No, there was an interview. We had to do like a public interview. It was very uncomfortable because they brought everybody in and we all sat at this table and, you know, they're up on this bench asking us questions and for whatever reason, they liked my answers.
You have a record of being, I think, a person of the community and doing a lot of things that helps the community. And I think a position like on a county commission, wherever that may be, you want somebody who has a track record and an interest in bettering that community. So for me, that would be a no-brainer.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I've been a lawyer for 24 years now. And part of that, I was doing a lot of charity work, a lot of fundraising, helping organizations, helping, you know, different people. And that's kind of what led me into the county commission. There was soccer fields out at Trace Fork out by Target in South Charleston. I know you've got listeners from everywhere, and it was going into foreclosure. And so they asked me to come in and try to help. And we raised a bunch of money, I think around $350,000 just in a few weeks. And I was almost there. I was almost to the point where we could save the fields, but I had tapped out. I mean, my friends wouldn't even answer my calls anymore. So I went to the Kanawha County Commission and I said, guys, I need $50,000. You know, this is what it's for. This is what it will do for the community. And after a lot of begging, they gave it to me, and you know, it saved the fields. It saved the fields from foreclosure. And that's, you know, that kind of led into my interest in the Kanawha County Commission. And I had been a soccer coach for a little while, not too long, but
I remember
that's what led to my interest in soccer.
So, and just to kind of segue off of that, you stole my golf course, and I'm kidding, by the way, that's a joke. But no, honestly, as a businessman myself, I try to be a man of the community as well. I want this community to be better for my kids and my grandkids than how we leave it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I remember and what I'm talking about for those who might not know, Shawnee is a park that we have in the Charleston area, had a little 9-hole golf course on it. I love golf, played there. Gosh, I mean, I should have had a membership there. I played so much. But Ben had this great idea to put some soccer fields in, some other facilities, and mainly bring in outside teams and tournaments, all to boost revenue for the county and for the area, hotels, restaurants, all the things people do when they travel, right? Spend money.
Yep.
And I remember at first it stung a little bit. I think I even joked with you. I was like, man, taking my golf course, you know. But once I think anybody takes a step back and goes, this is what's best for all of us. And you were right. I mean, I think a lot of us can now say Ben Salengo was right. You look at the results, you look at what that has done for the Dunbar area, for the county, for the teams. My daughter played a little bit of soccer. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. So, you know, I really think that showed a lot of people in the area your vision and how good you are at having a vision and then implementing that vision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. And, you know, it's funny because our youngest son, our oldest played basketball, our youngest son played soccer. And so we would go everywhere. I mean, every weekend we were packing up and heading to Columbus or Charlotte or Cincinnati or wherever. Mm-hmm. And so there was one particular time I remember that we were, I think it was Columbus, and we had to stay like 45 minutes away from the fields. And every time we went to dinner, you know, any restaurant, it was an hour and a half, 2 hour wait. And I remember the parents were saying, you know, why can't we have something like this back home? Why can't we have something like this in West Virginia?
Yeah.
And so I went back and I called my friend who was then the director of the state tourism department. And I said, you know, we need to really look into this. We need to figure out how we can do this in West Virginia. He said, you know, this is something that is really catching on all over the country. It's called sports tourism. You know, families will load up, they'll travel for the weekend, whether it's basketball or volleyball or soccer. And just so happened, my son plays soccer. So the director of tourism, of course, was now Mayor Amy Goodwin. She and I had talked about those years ago. And
I forgot she did that.
She was. Yeah. And so she's the one that told me about sports tourism. So I go and then, you know, just kind of the events that played out, I was appointed commissioner. The very first email that I sent out the following morning was, has there ever been a study about bringing travel sports into Charleston, West Virginia? And of course there had. There have been several, you know, some as old as 20 years where they had said, hey, guys, if you get on this, this is the way to go. You're going to bring in lots of money in the community. And the most recent study was around 2015. The Charleston Convention Bureau did it, and it said, this is what you need to do. And by the way, Shawnee's the place to do it. Now, Shawnee has a wonderful history. That land was actually owned by George Washington. Not many people know that. Washington, it was deeded to him for his deeds as a general, for his service as a general. And then when he passed, it went to his heirs. And it just kept getting divided up and divided up. And finally, there was a deed in place that says that land can only be used for recreation. And so that's why, if you look at the history of it, it's always been used for recreation. It was a state park or, you know, a fairgrounds. It was a golf course. It was a racetrack. It's been a little bit of everything. And so it was also, you know, one of the few areas in Kanawha County that's flat. So that study kind of, I took that and just ran with it. So yeah. We announced, you know, a few months later that we were looking into it. We broke ground in December of 2017 and cut the ribbon in July of 18. Since that That's time, awesome. Even during the COVID years where we were shut down for a year and a half, you know, it's brought in over $100 million in economic impact.
Oh.
So we have tournaments where people come in from all over. We just had a football tournament a month or two ago where a team flew in from Alaska. I had a team coming in from Spain to play soccer, and the government wouldn't let them come in, you know, their government, not ours. So we bring in people from all over the place. We've had teams from California, from Florida, you know, you name it, we've had it. And it's been a success. Now, I hate that we took the golf course because I am a terrible golfer, Nick. If I can break 100, I consider that a win. And it was one of the few places that I could play golf and look like, you know, a decent player.
It was very forgiving. It was very flat. But that history to Shawnee, I never knew it was deeded to George Washington. So was that whole area through there, like where the houses are as well?
Everything. And then even if you go into the other side of it. So the original, and they don't call it deeds. I forget what they called it back then. Surveys, I think. The original was actually at the Putnam County Courthouse. So you can go see it. But if you look at that area, I mean, it's such an historical area. You've got the Tuskegee Airmen that trained over there. It's just a wonderful area. We're proud, you know, of the success of the Shawnee Sports Complex. We've got a lot going on. I mean, that's still you know, that's still booming, quite frankly. We've got tournaments coming up. We've landed USU soccer tournaments. In fact, before we even put a shovel in the ground, I had already a commitment from USU soccer to bring in about $60 million worth of tournaments.
And oh, my Lord.
Now, so there was pressure. I mean, there was a lot of pressure because those tournaments weren't going to wait on us. We had to have it ready to go by the time the tournaments came. And luckily we did. We had a great architect. We had great contractors. You know, Hazlett Construction did the contracting and
ZMM. It looks beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
It looks wonderful.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. State-of-the-art turf. The turf that's at that facility is the same turf they have in Atlanta where the Falcons play. You know, it's it's called Field Turf Revolution 360, the highest quality. Now, the reason I even bring that up is because it reduces concussion, it reduces lower extremity injuries. You know, there's a reason why we paid a little more for that, and we've got state of the art lighting. You know, the LED Musco lighting, which there's no spill. You know, you take a facility that size, 130, 140 acres, and throw lights all around it. All of a sudden, the entire community is lit up every time there's a night game, right? So, and they don't want to see that at 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
We were able to get the state of the art lighting where there's zero spill. I mean, if I don't want if I want field two to be completely dark and field one to be lit, we do that. I mean, it's pretty impressive, the technology, and we're making some upgrades. We're going to be announcing some upgrades pretty soon.
That's awesome. Yeah. And for those who are listening outside of our area, the reason it's called Shawnee is there's an Indian burial mound on site. And the Shawnee, they were in this area. And I'm sure there's still descendants in this area. So that mound, did you guys have to work around that? Were there any historical?
Yeah, historical. You'd say that. Now, there are no Indians buried in that mound anymore. The Smithsonian back in the 1980s took them out. And so they're over at the Smithsonian. But you know,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you run into an Indian arrowhead, you've got to stop digging. I mean, so there was a lot of care taken, and you know, it's no secret that area is a fill spot. You know, it was basically a dump. The coal companies would burn down the coal, and that's why it's flat. I mean, it's all fill. So we had to take precautions there too. I mean, because you didn't want to have kids out there playing and them getting sick from some type of exposure. So we've got about 1 million square feet of concrete down as a barrier. So it did a couple of things. It protected the area, and then it also served as a stabilizer because the soil is not the best.
Now, I was giving you a hard time about taking the golf course, but I see there's a new golf course being built at another park we call Coonskin here in Charleston. Do you have a hand in that as well?
Well, you know, Commissioner Lance Wheeler is on the board of Coonskin, the Parks and Rec board. And so he's instrumental in that. He and General Allen Tackett and a few others, they've been instrumental. I'm involved to the extent that we approve budgets, we approve expenditures, but I haven't been out there following it every day. But I certainly trust them, and I know they are working hard. We're putting a significant amount of money into it to try.
It looks great just driving by.
Yeah, I think it's going to be wonderful. And you know, we've got some other areas we need to work on as far as golf is concerned. And
Big Ben, I love those guys out there. The guys that work there are great, and I love going out there and just shooting the crap with them, for lack of a better term. Yeah. But it needs a little tender loving care.
It needs a little TLC. Nothing money will take care of. So we just got.
I mean, I won't say a bulldozer's TLC, but you know, it's a joke. I'm absolutely kidding.
Yes, we've got some plans out there too.
Anything you can share, or is that still kind of
not until we vote on it? I have to be careful.
Absolutely. No, I get it. A minute ago, you mentioned Amy Goodwin. She's the mayor of Charleston. And Amy and I used to talk back and forth quite often. And when she sees me, she always runs up, gives me a big hug. I love Amy to death. But I've texted her about 4 times to be on this podcast, and I haven't heard back. Oh. So when we hang up, I need you to be like, Amy, I do have to give her props. You know, when I first moved to Charleston, and I did a podcast about a month ago, and I can't remember who, it might have been with Chase Mitchell, we talked about this. And when I got here in 2006, I won't lie. My first impression of Charleston was not wonderful. It felt dirty. Yeah. It felt not a lot going on. You know, At that time I was 22, a nightclub DJ, a party DJ, a radio DJ, you know, and I had been in all these huge mega nightclubs in Cincinnati DJing. There was nightlife. And at that point in my life, in my early 20s, you know, I liked the nightlife and going out. And then I moved here and there was nothing, you know. And then it felt like not only outside of nightlife, there wasn't a lot to do for a young 20-something either, right. You know. So I just remember my first impressions of Charleston back then weren't always the greatest. However, Danny Jones was our mayor. I love Danny. I consider Danny a friend. I don't have a bad word to say about Danny. He has always been super sweet and kind to me all the times I've ever met him. But I feel like maybe his generation and my generation and maybe the things that his generation wanted to do and were interested in doing and putting on and the things that maybe my generation was interested in doing, putting on, were polar opposite, right? I mean, that's fair to say, right? Because there's a gap. So when Amy came on, I started to notice a change, and I started to notice more things that 30-year-olds with kids, you know, and 20-year-olds and basically all ages could do. Not that Danny didn't do that, but I feel like Amy really kind of opened up the doors for more family inclusive events, yeah. More events in general. And then of course the regatta, which now we know was a massive financial yeah. success for the city.
$32 million.
I mean, why we weren't doing this 10 years ago blows my mind. But so did Danny do a good job, in my opinion? Absolutely. Yeah. But is Amy crushing it? I don't want to get into Republican, Democrat bull crap. I think just evaluating somebody at the job that they're doing, I think she's doing an amazing job and she's crushing it. So make sure yeah. you tell her. I'm going to clip yeah, that and send absolutely. It to her.
Well, you know, and the funny, so you look back at Danny's legacy and he did a lot. I mean, and he had a whole different,
sure.
he had different problems to deal with then, but you know, Power
well,
Park.
Well, real quick, I don't want to take anything yeah, away from Danny. I'm not knocking Danny. It was just a different generational type of interest. That's
right.
all there was.
So Danny built Power Park. He went in the Charleston Convention Center, which is a really big deal. And actually, it's funny because when Amy took over, and the convention center was doing well, but when Amy took over, she brought in a national group to kind of bring in acts and manage it. And now it's, I mean, the revenue is incredible out of that. And so that's why she and I sat down, and we had talked for years about building an indoor sports complex. And that's why she and I sat down. We said, you know what, we just got to do this. We've got to make this happen. This is right for the community. It's right for our kids. Our small businesses need this. And that's what led to the development of the new Capital Sports Center, which is going to be not in the mall, but in the property around the mall.
I'm glad you brought that up organically because it's on my list here to talk about. And I think that is a wonderful thing for our area. And that's one of the big reasons I wanted to talk to you was about that project. And anyone who's familiar with the Charleston area, you know, it really hurts my heart. And this is no bull crap just for this conversation or, you know, anyone who watches this. But seeing the Charleston Town Center in its current state breaks my heart. And I'll tell you why. Excuse me. When I moved here in 2006, that place was yeah. packed. Every storefront. I used to go down there and shop all the time. I used to go down there, buy video games, you know, at GameStop and everything. When I was still in my radio days, we did a ton of live radio remotes there. I used to go down and host the trick or treat for the kids to walk through the mall at each store and trick or treat. I hosted that. I used to host the mall idol. We did like an American Idol every week. Remember that. And I was Ryan Seacrest. So I tell you that story because the mall has always had very special memories to me. And to see its current status, and it's following suit with thousands of other malls across right. America. So it's not a unique thing here. And then when I saw what you guys were planning to do, I was like, that is the answer. That is it. So please, for those who don't know, tell us about this project.
So, you know, the Charleston Town Center has been on the decline for a number of years. And there's a ton of reasons. I mean, we've got, you know, Southridge opened up. So we've got people that are shopping out there. Barbersville is doing very well. Its mall is still crushing it. there's a lot of reasons for that. Some people blame the parking garage. Some people blame the stores, whatever. My goal was, what can we do to help the community, to help business, and also bring foot traffic into the mall? What could we do? And, you know, when the mall was sold at auction, I'll be honest with you, I had discussions with people about the county and the city buying it and just leveling it. You know, just buy it, demolish it, and let's start over. Let's do outdoor retail. Let's do outdoor dining with condos and apartments on top. Almost like the one in Columbus, Easton.
So, Easton, beautiful gorgeous place. And, you know, and not to cut you off, Easton is a destination regionally. We go up there just to shop, and we're in West Virginia. And I know people in Cleveland do, and in Toledo and Indianapolis. Easton is a regional destination. So I think that is a fantastic idea to make a regional destination in Charleston.
And, you know, Nick, I've had idea indoor water parks. I've talked to Great Wolf Lodge. I've talked to so many people with different ideas. So once the current owners bought it, you know, their idea was to repurpose it, to try to rehab it, bring in more stores. And I met with the mall owner several times. I mean, he's been very nice and very courteous to us. But it was obvious that we weren't going to be able to get the mall. Maybe we could get a portion of it, but I didn't want to be into the business of buying, you know, a portion of the mall. So we decided to use assets that were within the city's control, or at least grasp. And that would be the Macy's building, which is empty, and then also the parking garages. So the mall itself, if you include those two things, the parking garage and then also the Macy's building, is 23 acres. Not many people realize how big that area is. So the goal is to take the Macy's building, essentially tear it about halfway down, about half of it off, turn that into an Olympic-style aquatic center. It's going to be a 50-meter pool with 10 lanes, warm-up pools. We're going to bring in swimmers from all over. There's only one other 50-meter pool in West Virginia, and that's in Morgantown. So we'd be able to do that. We'll have a 30-foot rock climbing wall where kids can come and climb and rent rooms for birthday parties and just really a community feel. And then on the other side, we're going to have six basketball courts that, you know, are converted into 12 volleyball courts. Now, the reason why earlier I mentioned the Charleston Coliseum and Convention Center is how important those two facilities will be working together. So the convention center has 13 sport courts, which turns out to be 26 volleyball, right? Two on a basketball court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our facility, sure, which is right across the street, is going to have six basketball turns into 12 volleyball. So you've got 38 volleyball courts. That's 76 teams playing at one time. So we'll be able to host the largest volleyball tournaments in America right here in Charleston, West Virginia.
Wow.
So we'll be able to bring in, you know, big basketball tournaments, which they're doing, but not to this scale. You know, you get almost 20 basketball courts under one roof. You can host massive tournaments, massive volleyball tournaments.
Oh, yeah.
Pickleball, absolutely, which I had never heard of. I had to get on YouTube and figure out what it was, but it's the fastest growing sport in America for 2 years in a row. And so I even bought a racket the other day, Nick. You should see it. I don't know how to play yet, but I'm going to learn. But so we're going to have indoor pickleball courts, be able to host pickleball tournaments, bring people in for that. And then also we've got a wrestling room. You know, I was a wrestler growing up, and we were always trying to find places to wrestle. We used to, you know, we threw a mat in a garage, and that's where we'd practice. But these guys and girls have no place to practice, so we're going to be able to host that as well. Indoor running track elevated above the basketball courts, 5 laps around is 1 mile. So just think of the scale. We're talking about 256,000 square feet. Yeah, a quarter of a million square feet.
It's
an $80 million project is what we're anticipating. And
now, if I can get a little nerd-ish with you, how will the county or the city support the infrastructure, like employees and utilities and water in the pool and all of these things?
That's a good question. We anticipate about $80 million to build. We're going to ask for some federal grants. Both of our U.S. senators are big supporters of this project. You know, we've talked to Senator Manchin and Senator Capito. They both think this is a wonderful idea. They understand the benefit that it will bring the community. And then, so we're trying to get as many federal grants as we can. I'll tell you that Jim Justice is on board. We've got good support from the state. Businesses have already been calling me. You know, what can we do to help? What can we sponsor? What can we open there? That kind of thing.
That's awesome.
I've already had three different hotels call, want to operate. They want to create and build three new hotels in Charleston to support this facility. Yeah.
Have you made this public yet?
I mean, it's a big deal. It's a real deal.
How have I not heard about the hotel? I've heard about all this, most of this other
funny story,
information.
When we announced, I was on the way home. I had not made it home before a hotel owner somehow got my cell phone and called me and said, "Hey, I just watched the announcement on Facebook Live. What can we do? When's this going to start?" Just starts, you know, asking a lot of the questions.
That is awesome.
So it's been a tremendous success. It's got a lot of support in the community, and it's going to generate a lot of business, you know, a new hotel. So about $80 million to build. Then you've got to worry about operating it. Operational cost on the pool side, let me just tell you now, I know this is being recorded, so I need people to know, pools do not make money. Pools are money pits.
No.
You will always lose money. If you're thinking about putting a pool in your backyard, you're going to spend a lot more than you think you're going to spend.
I've always told the two best days of owning a pool is the day you open it and the day you tear it down.
But there's a need. I mean, you know, so there's a need for an Olympic-sized pool in this region. And keep in mind, Charleston is an eight-hour drive from two-thirds of the nation's population. You know, you can be in New York. New York City can be here in 8 hours. And then think of everything that's within a four-hour drive. So there's a need here. So on the aquatic center side, that's where most of the operational expense is going to be. I'm not guessing. I've studied these all over the country. About $1.2 million is going to cost to operate that every single year.
On the
other side, you've got the basketball court. You've got this two-story workout facility that's honestly bigger than Planet Fitness. We've got to staff that as well. So you're looking at about $2 to $2.3 million per year to operate. Now, how are we going to pay for that? You do it by selling memberships. So tournament entry fees and things like that. So that's what we're looking to do. If you have 3,000 people, and let's say the blended monthly fee is $50. You know, maybe a single membership is $20. Maybe a family membership is $80, but a blended is $50. And you have 3,000 people that belong. That's $150,000 a month.
And then you times that by 12, and you're covering your costs.
Then you've got to look at where you're going to come up with the rest of it, and you do that through tournament entrance fees. You do it through sponsorships. So the numbers work out. But the benefit of this is how many other things it will support. You know, how many restaurants are going to benefit? How many stores? And guess what? If you look at the plans, by the way, the video which ZMM did for us is on YouTube. If you just type in Capital with an AL, not OL, Capital Sports Center, it'll come up. So I want you to check this out, and you'll notice something missing from inside this facility. Did you get what it was?
Waldo? Well, I watched it when you guys announced it. I was at my office and I watched it, and I hadn't heard about it. And I've got a lot of friends in the city government and the county government and you, and it was really hush hush.
Because we didn't want it leaked out.
So I remember watching the video. And, you know, over the last 5 years, I helped the National Guard with a lot of their engineering and building and architecture and things like that. So I understand a lot of the cost that goes into not only design builds, getting a video like that, and then actually, you know, putting shovel to dirt and everything. So I remember watching that video. I was like, how much is this thing going to cost? You know, and
so it's about $80 million is our estimate. But here's the thing that you did not see in the video.
But I didn't see anything that I should have missed.
There are no restaurants in this facility. So when you're bringing people in, they're going to be working out at 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. and lunch, and they're going to be working out afterwards. That's just everyday usage. You're going to have kids there practicing basketball and practicing volleyball and wrestling. And so when they want to eat, they got to go to the mall, right? So we are, it's building foot traffic into the mall, hundreds and hundreds of people every day, thousands and thousands of people on the weekend. You know, on a tournament weekend at Shawnee, we'll have 6,000 people come through. So imagine putting 6,000 people in that mall. Where are they going to eat? Well, we've got the food court, but more things are going to develop. We got some things. Where are they going to shop? You know, is there going to be a sporting goods store in there? What about the local hospitals? Maybe they want to use this facility for therapy, aquatic therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy. And so there's going to be a lot of usage during the week. There's going to be a lot of people then going into the mall. And then on the weekends, it's going to be packed.
Absolutely. And that's very smart, getting people to go back to the mall. That's something I didn't even think about, which helps the mall. Now, is the owner of the mall helping in any way or contributing?
He's so tickled. Basically, I'm putting an $80 million playground in his backyard. So he's thrilled. He's thrilled. So, but the thing of it is, let's say that I've miscalculated and it doesn't save the mall, so to speak. It doesn't hurt the facility. So, you know, if the mall's torn down and repurposed for something else, fine. The facility's still there, you know, but what it will do is make better usage of that downtown space. So maybe then you get an Eastern style shopping and dining. Maybe you get another hotel. Absolutely. Maybe you get an indoor water park. Who knows? But the thing that I can tell you is, if you build a facility like this, people will travel to it. You know, I hate to say if you build it, they will come. But that's true. That's exactly what will happen. Travel sports before the pandemic was a $19 billion with a B dollar industry. Okay. Since the pandemic, and I don't know why this is, but it's true. They've studied it. It's a $40 billion industry. It's actually doubled.
Well, I can tell you why. And I'll be the first to admit, and you know this because you've known me for probably 14, 15 years now, I'm a moron. So, but I'll give you my moronic reasoning as to why that is. After COVID, my DJ service, so I got shut down and all my events got canceled for 8 months. I won't even tell you how much money I lost. But anyway, so in 21, when 2021 folks started realizing, okay, we can have bookings again. When I tell you I got flooded, and I, this is not being braggadocious. This is nothing. Literally for every, say, Saturday weekend, because that's where most people want to book their events, are on a Saturday. So if you have 52 Saturdays in a year, in 2021, in most of 22 now, I probably had 20 to 100, depending on the time of the year, if it was peak season like April or May, I had 20 to 100 inquiries per Saturday. Okay. And I'm one guy. So it was first come, first serve. And I have a lot of friends in the industry that were the exact same way, just hammered. I had DJ friends in like Columbus, Pittsburgh calling me like, hey, Nick, are you free this weekend? Can I put you on a gig? Like, you know, so I tell you that to say, and you know this, people are getting out. They didn't want to be at home anymore. They had plans for that year they didn't get to do. And their people are just getting out and they're traveling. They had a year where they couldn't travel. Now they want to travel. So to see that number increase, in my own experience with my business, absolutely makes sense because people couldn't do anything long. And now they can, and they're like, let's go. We're going and doing
it. They are. And so the timing is good. Now, so we're looking at, on the development side, we're doing another public hearing in a few days. And then we'll go into the architecture stage. We'll, you know, retain an architect. They'll design it. That's going to take about 9 months. They tell me 9 to 12. I'm telling them, you got 6. So I want to move this thing along.
well, when do you anticipate a grand opening?
I would say it's going to take 3 years. When you include the design, the engineering, some of the legal hurdles we'll need to deal with. And then construction will be about 2 years. So I'd say about 3 years. But I would imagine
next year,
put a shovel on the ground. I'd be down there right now.
This is the worst part about remote podcasting is it's hard not to talk over each other. So I apologize for that. Well, I have two questions I want to parlay off of. One, can I get you on record saying the grand opening? I'm the DJ for the party at the grand opening. Can we go ahead? All right. So I'm going to bring this in 3 years, just so you know. I'm going to get on my phone. I'm going to like, hey, Ben, and I'm going to send you this clip. So hi, Ben, in 3 years. The second thing is correct me if I'm wrong. You were talking about the interest in hotels to come downtown and be a part of this amazing project. Isn't or wasn't, I don't know how to phrase this question, the Sears building supposed to be a hotel by now?
Yeah, and they're moving towards that. I mean, they're doing the demolition, and there was a couple of legal battles going on, and the judge cleared those up, thankfully.
So that will be nothing but a benefit to your project or this 100%, project as well.
100%. I've talked to those folks. They're very excited about our project. Of course, they were building it anyway. You know, the truth is Charleston needs two more hotels just based on what we've got going on now. And so then you add, you know, the largest indoor sports facility in the eastern United States, right downtown. That's a big deal. So we're going to have more hotels coming in.
And for those who don't know, Ben was the governor candidate or nominee for the Democratic Party in West Virginia in 2020. He ran for governor, ran against our current governor, Jim Justice. And the reason I bring this up is you mentioned Jim being a governor justice, being a fan of the project there at the indoor sports complex. How was your working relationship with him post political run?
You know, it's funny because first of all, you know, he and I get along. I like him. I like him. He's a good guy. I joke with him, you know, when I see him. And I mean, I could tell you so many stories from that that election, but
I'd love to hear some. I mean, we can go as long as you want.
I mean, there's some good ones, but I remember how awkward it was when we were getting ready for our debate. You know, I'd won the Democratic primary and he won the Republican primary. And so we're squared off in the one and only debate. And you know, we're in separate rooms and I mean, I've got to use a bathroom, right? I'm getting ready to go on. I'm nervous. You know, I'm not afraid to say you go on live TV in a debate. Everybody's nervous. I walk in the restroom and there's Jim, you know? And so we just, you know, he's just, you know, we get along. I mean, there's the campaign and then there's reality. You know, he had commercials about me. I had commercials about him, but the reality is I've known him for quite a while. He and I get along. We're actually, you know, we're supporting a couple of issues in this election, not to bring those up, but when the campaign started and we polled it, this was pre-COVID. And so the polling was very favorable to us and COVID starts, nobody could have predicted it. You know, I'm, you know, in the middle of an election and all of a sudden I can't really campaign. I'm Zooming instead of, you know, handshaking. And I thought the governor, you know, his handling of the pandemic, he did a good job. I've told him that, you know, there were certain things that, you know, little tiny things he and I might disagree on and would be overblown. But for the most part, he and I agreed and I thought he did a good job and the people thought he did a good job. You know, his approval rating soared during the pandemic and good for him. You know, that was he brought in a great team and, you know, handled it.
Look, you know, there's no one of any political ideology that's going to agree on everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes our society in the way that we govern ourselves so unique in the world, but such a wonderful place is we can say, okay, you know, I disagree with you on this, this, and this, but in the greater whole, I believe, you know, the majority of us are interested in what is best for all of us, whether it be here in a state or as a nation. And you mentioned how you two get along, you know, and even though there was the campaign, but you two get along. And my opinion has always been if political leaders, okay, whatever that may be, if we get along with one another and we help one another and we make decisions with one another, despite what our political R or D or whatever is, it does nothing but good. It does nothing but help us. It does nothing but help everyone. Yeah. So to hear that you two get along so well still, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's important. I mean, there are certain people there are certain elected officials, typically at the lower level, that just don't like me because I'm a Democrat. That's fine. I get it. I don't particularly care what anybody's party is. I care more about their ideas and what they're doing. But the truth is I get along, you know, Joe Manchin and I are, you know, not only friends, but we work closely together. Senator Capito has done a very good job in West Virginia. She and I work together frequently. And, you know, case in point, you know, we had the terrible floods up in the Upper Kanawha Valley, Campbell's Creek and in that area. And we called the governor.
Right in my backyard.
I mean, we called the governor and we need help. And he had his people out. I mean, it was immediate. We had roads that had slipped out and they fixed them. We had, he was up there touring the damage himself. He's trying to help us with a disaster declaration. You know, our U.S. senators are helping. I need the president to sign off on a disaster declaration so we can get these people HVAC units before they freeze to death. You know, I mean, it's a big deal when you're dealing with emergency management, and you've got to work together. I tell you, if you play politics, absolutely, people die, and it's not what you're there for.
You know, one of my biggest regrets is growing up in just north of Cincinnati, very rural area. I always have a hard time with that word. I used to speak for a living, rural, but very conservative family, and that's fine. So I grew up kind of with those ideals impressed upon me. And then I remember when I hit about 19, 20 years old, I swung as far the other direction as possible and became very liberal. I was a very big supporter of Kerry when he ran in 2004. And then I was a very big adamant supporter of Obama when he ran in 2008. And there is something to be said for what you allow in. And what I mean by what you allow in, what you watch, what you hear, what you read, what you see. And I found myself as a radio guy. At the time, we had an AM radio station that was all political talk, and it was all conservative Republican talk, you know, with your Glenn Becks and so forth. And by 2012, I found myself radicalized. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was extremely, I guess, right wing. I mean, I had went from this liberal, you know, and Obama supporting registered Democrat to, you know, Obama is, you know, the Antichrist walking on the earth, and a change to a registered Republican. And I remember about 2014 sitting down going, what am I doing? Like, I'm arguing with people on social media for what reason? Yeah. For, I mean, just making myself look like a fool. You know, it was fraying some relationships, some friendships of mine. And I just remember thinking to myself, no extreme is the right answer. You know what I mean? In my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I started to center myself, and I haven't changed my voting thing. It's still Republican. I don't care if people know that, because I'm not an extremist. I'm not a MAGA guy, you know, or whatever. I'm not knocking them, but that's just not my speed. And people are like, well, Nick, what's your political philosophy? And I say, hey, look, I want my gay friends to get married while smoking weed with their machine guns. So I want my gay friends to get married, smoking weed with their machine guns. If that doesn't tell you my political feelings, you know, I just want us all to, the pursuit of happiness in this country is very important to me. And whatever that may be, whoever that may be, however that may be, is kind of where I've drawn the line in the sand. And, when I see folks like you in the political world who are really trying to bring change to their communities, dude, it makes me feel so good. And I want you to know that, you know, there are people like me out here watching you and love that you are in that position.
I appreciate it. You know, thankfully, the majority of time, county commissioner is not a political position. I mean, it can get political. It's been, unfortunately, around election time, it gets political. But, you know, the good thing is I'm able to drown out a lot of noise. You know, the governor's race taught me some valuable lessons. I mean, there are people, and you're talking about radicalized people. You know, social media has really changed elections. It's changed the way people think. It's changed the way we act. It's changed everything. And you have to deal with that. And so, you know, during the governor's race, I'd be out and I was videotaped all the time. From the moment I left my house to the time that I got home, somebody was trailing me. videotaping me. And I'm not suggesting the governor had anything to do with it. It was other people.
Sure.
You know, I'd show up to events and people would put their phones in their pockets like this and come up and ask, you know, try to,
you could see, you
know, and say things to me, insult me, try to get a reaction out of me. And so going through that experience, it was tough. It's tough on the family, but it was eye-opening and educational. I learned a lot from that. First of all, I love being in the race. That, you know,
do you feel it was they were trying to catch you doing something you shouldn't have been and then exposing it all over the place?
Well, what they do is they'll come up and they'll try to incite an argument. They'll come up and they'll say things to you, you know, inappropriate things, or they'll curse you, or they'll threaten you, and all they want is your reaction. And so I had to learn to deal with that because, I mean, you know, I'm an Italian descent from somewhere in Virginia. I usually say what I think. And so I had to really adjust to that. I had to learn to not speak, you know.
Yeah.
And
that's the smartest thing.
Not respond and not engage on social media. No one's ever won a fight on Facebook. Never.
No. You know, I fell into that hole, and you know this, you and I have talked about it, and it's an easy hole to fall into. And, you know, at the time, you know, I was working in radio and really trying to make a name for myself, for my business, because, you know, me and you've talked about this, and I'm not slamming anybody, but radio, especially in this market, you don't make any money. So I had to build my business, my brand, to basically make ends meet. And I thought, the old analogy, no press is bad press. Mm. So I would really try to like spin people up and post things and whatever. And I look back, you know, that was over 10 years ago. I mean, I stopped doing that around 2012. It's 2022 now. So it's been 10 years ago. But I look back and I'm just like, I wish I could go back and grab 31-year-old Nick and just smack him. Like, what are you doing, dude? You know, and you're right. I could think of 200-400 comment long Facebook threads, right, of me and other people going back and forth, and not a single person won that argument or debate, and no good came from it.
And you know who else lost? And here's the truth of it, because when you finish that argument, you're worked up. And everybody else around you feels it. You know, everybody else is tense, they're stressed, they see what, you know, that you're into an argument and, you know, you're not in a good mood. And so it's best just to take it for what it is. It's, you know, people get on there, they say things on social media that they would never say in person.
Never.
They get into arguments that they would never get into in person. I'm not sure why. I'm sure there've been studies on it, but you just got to let it roll off your back. I mean, you know, when I actually have an entire PowerPoint of it's pretty.
Are you going to give us death by PowerPoint on the podcast?
No, I do a speech where, you know, sometimes when I'm invited in and I'll let them choose, what are you going to talk about? But one of them is about social media. And so I have all of these screenshots of just nasty, terrible, hateful things, death threats, everything that I will play during the PowerPoint and just joke about it, you know, because if you can't laugh about it and understand what it really is, it'll tear you apart. And, you know, we've had people good people that have gotten out of politics because of it.
Sure. I'm sure it hurts here a lot, cause I've experienced that.
I laugh about it now.
Now I do. Yeah. Cause I don't participate in it, but, in your presentation, your PowerPoint presentation, you don't have any Nick Scott stuff in there, do you?
No, I can't think of any nasty things.
Well, hey, I've had you all on for almost an hour. I don't have a time limit, but I don't want to make folks feel like they have to sit here forever.
No.
One thing I did want to ask you, we talked about the governor's race. Real quickly, what was that experience like? Not all of us get to run for governor.
I tell you what, I loved it. I mean, I went to places that I otherwise would not have been able to go to. Even, you know, once the pandemic started, it really hampered what I could do outside of Zoom and Facebook Live and those types of things. But I loved it. I met great people. Some of the things that I saw that some of the people that I talked to, you know, I'll remember that till the day I die. I remember, you know, going down to McDowell County and seeing these people. Nick, you think Charleston was bad in 2006? You should see McDowell County, you know, a county that once had over 100,000 people, and now there's nothing. I mean, there's literally nothing.
That's where Welch is, Welch, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so you go into Welch, I mean, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous city. And back in its day, it was booming. So you go around and you talk to these people, and you really, you feel for them. You want to do a good job. You want to help them. You know, there was a town down there, Keystone, I believe, didn't have water for years. They didn't have clean water. You turn on the spigot, it was like chocolate milk coming out. I mean, there are places, Nick, that it's heartbreaking. And so
how is that in our state in this day and age?
I don't know, man. It's awful. And then you go and you see other places that are just taken off. I mean, Morgantown is taken off. Eastern Panhandle, you go into that area, it's really taken off. And before this, other than some soccer tournaments, I hadn't really spent that much time in the Eastern Panhandle, but it's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Next to D.C., you know, you can take the MARC train in. And anyway, I had a blast. I had an absolute blast. Some of the people I met, obviously, I'm still in communication with now. We still text and email and talk. And it was hard on the kids, you know, for me being gone a lot. And but they understand.
Yeah. So can we say now on the Nick Scott Effect podcast that Vince Alango is going to run again?
We'll see.
We're, you know, deflection.
I follow numbers. I follow trends. You know, I'm not, I don't want to just, you know, give away time. You know, I don't want to run if I can't win, I don't want to run. But
Jim up this term? Can he run again after this?
He cannot run again. So it'll be an open seat. And, you know, there are a bunch of Republicans that are going to run. I would imagine in that Republican primary in 2024, probably looking at 10 or 12 different people.
Sure.
On the Democratic side, you know, we'll see who runs. You know, I think Mayor Steve Williams out of Huntington would be phenomenal.
Sure.
You know, in all of the gossip political columns, they've got me in there, but we'll see. But, you know, we've got some really good people on both sides. We really do. And on the Republican side, there are some people that I really like.
Could you see you staying at the Kanawha County Commission for a long time? Or if the governor isn't in your wheelhouse, maybe House of Delegates or Senate?
I'm not interested in House of Delegates or Senate.
Okay.
You know, I could have done that. The House, they've got, now we're a single member district. So they've got what, six or 8,000 constituents. I'm fortunate. I've got 183,000 constituents. You know, I'm serving a really big group, and never really had any interest in being in the House, never had any interest in being in the state Senate. So we'll see. I mean, I'm very content with my life now. I mean, great law firm, you know, I've got great employees. You know, the county commission, I'm able to get things done. I mean, think about it. If you're a delegate, you know, you've got to get a bunch of votes. I only need one besides mine. I mean, there's only three of us. So if I want to get something done, I've just got to get Cantor Lance to agree with me.
You just got to take them out for a good steak dinner.
Yeah. I've got to come up with a reason for them to vote for me. So it's a lot easier. But I enjoy it. You know, I've got great people that work at the county commission, make me look good, and they work hard.
Well, Ben, man, you've been a in terms of my West Virginia life, a lifelong friend. I think you hired me. The first time we met was to do a Halloween party.
I remember that. Yeah, you've got a few of them. They're always great.
What happened? Where are they now?
We put them on the back burner. Maybe next year. Well, you know, we keep saying that. We keep saying it. Maybe next year. I mean, it's such a good time, and we love hosting them.
Well, outside of all the political stuff and everything, I want to thank you for everything you've done for me and my family. It means a lot to me and your friendship, of course. And even though I had an R on my voting ID, I did vote for you for governor. Sorry, Governor Justice. I love you. I love you, Jim. I really do. But, you and I, Ben, have had a long history. And I know Jim's done a great job. Governor Justice done a great job. But I had no doubt you would do a great job as well. So I hope in the future maybe we'll see a Governor Selengo. That would be pretty cool. I know that's probably hard on the family. And as a family man myself, that's something you really have to consider. So I commend you for that.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, it's always good if you've got two good candidates. That way, no matter which way it goes, you win. And I remember, it's funny because about 2 weeks ago, I don't know what I was searching for, but my concession speech came up on YouTube. And I had not watched it since that night, since November of 2020. Had not watched it. So this is a true story. You know, I gave the concession speech. It was probably around 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. I was at work at my law office the next morning at 7 a.m. I kind of just moved on, just done with it, move on. But I watched that concession speech and I remember, and this is true. I said, I wish Jim Justice all the best, because if he's successful, then West Virginia's successful. And I truly meant it.
Yep.
I do not care whether it's a Democrat or Republican running the state or the city or the county. I do not care. All I care about is that they have good ideas. All I care about is they work hard and that they put public service ahead of self-service, because there's always opportunities to use your public service to benefit your own interests. And people that do that, they need to be called out for it.
Absolutely. And tell Tara, I send my love. Your wife is awesome. And she's doing a great job. She's a judge here in Kanawha County. For those who don't know, Tara Selengo, she's doing a great job. Is she up for re-election or she just have an election?
She's up in 2024. She's up in 2024. And then, of course, I'm unopposed, thankfully, this time around. So,
You are? Let me see here. Let me fight. Yeah.
I just have to go run. I just have to vote for myself and I win.
There you go. Can you do that?
Yeah. Now, there'll be people out there writing in Mickey Mouse, Oprah Winfrey or something. You know, they'll be writing people in. Nick Scott, they'll write him in.
Don't do that.
So I'm unopposed. So I won't have to run again till 2028.
Oh, wow.
As commissioner. It's a 6-year term.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's awesome, man. Well, Ben, I won't keep you any longer. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the people? Any other projects or anything coming up?
Nick, we've got a lot going on. I mean, we have a ton of projects. I've got a plan going on in the Upper Kanawha Valley that we initially called the Valley, and we're rebranding it. But it's basically a recreational tourism design that's going to be 30 miles long.
Oh my God!
It's going to stretch from Malden, all the way up to the new national park. All the way into Montgomery. And so when people come to the new park, they'll be able to come into Montgomery and ride the Hatfield-McCoy Trail. They'll be able to come in and hike. They'll be able to bike. They'll be able to four-wheel. We're going to have Jeep trails. We're going to have kayaking and canoeing. And so the Upper Kanawha Valley is kind of like when I was mentioning McDowell County, which has been hit the hardest of any county in West Virginia because of the decline of coal. Upper Kanawha Valley is the same. That's our version of McDowell County, if you will, although it's not quite as decimated. But that plan it's going to take years, but it's a way to bring in and play off of the new national park that's right there to bring people in to stay here, play here, eat here, and check out the park. I mean, the park's it's been incredible how many people are going to that. And the Hatfield-McCoy Trail, actually during COVID, the number of passes that were sold went up by like 50 or 60%.
Sure. I bought one.
People wanted to be out.
First time ever.
People wanted to be out town.
Yep.
Outside. And so we're bringing that here into that area to help those who have been hurt the most by the decline of coal. So, yeah, we've got a ton going on. I mean, I could sit here and talk for hours. But if you want to check out the new Capital Sports Center, it's Capital AL Sports Center, and check it out on YouTube. We've got a, I think it's like an 8-minute video.
That's awesome. And I don't know if you've, speaking of the Hatfield-McCoy Trail, I don't know how much truth is to this, but I've heard rumblings that, and I don't know if this falls in Kanawha County, but over in, would that be Frame? Where's Sanderson? Do you know where Sanderson is? I heard rumors that that might become a part of Hatfield-McCoy. Have you heard that as well?
Yeah, I haven't heard that. I will tell you that they've already started mapping the Hatfield-McCoy and Montgomery.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. They've
already mapping. So,
well, my wife, she's standing right off camera, and she just shook her head and greenlit me to buy a new $25,000 razor. So
I'm sorry, Kelly.
She's going. Hey, Ben, I love you, brother. You are always welcome on here. If something's big, is a big announcement, or you want to share information with the community, the fact that some DJ from Charleston has got a podcast that's taken off blows my mind. And you're always welcome to be on here and talk.
Hey, man, I appreciate your friendship, and best to you and your family.
All right. Thank you, brother. We'll be right back.